Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Vedam and Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the machloket that we had between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel and the Mishnah with regards to Tanai Kaful. It's now you say, Bishlamo, the Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Hainu Dichtiv. We can understand the Parshia of Sota, where it says, Im lo shachab ish otach, vim slo satit tuma tachad ishech, hinaki. So there we have a pasuk here that describes what's going to happen to the sota after she drinks the water. I'll quote you the pasuk. It says, "Vihishbia uta kohen." So the kohen is going to have her take a shvua. Va'amar leisha, and this is what they're going to say: "Im lo shachav ish otach." If you did not have an extramarital affair, v'im lo satit tuma, and therefore you were not defiled in any way, tachad ishech, while you were married, hinaki. You will be cleansed, you will be free, you will be innocent of anything that takes place here. They will not affect you. So that's a one statement or one-sided statement that says that if you did nothing wrong, then you will be fine. According to Rabbi Meir, you would expect to find the other side of the statement, which is, well, if you did do something wrong, then such and such had happened to you. But what we have afterwards is the next pasuk, which says, Va'at. Did you, because you did deviate from your behavior and your husband, and you were defiled, and someone slept with you besides your husband, and then the Kohen will be mashbir her with the Yishuat Allah. So as Rashi points out over here, the next pasuk that is written is not explaining the hishbia that came before it, but rather is the prelude to the subsequent pasuk of hishbia kohen et isha b'shvuat ha'alah. That it's actually the preface to the next pasuk about what the shvuat ha'alah is. Rashi notes over here what the Gemara in Sota says, which is that there are two shvuot over here. There's hishbia, and then hishbia kohen et isha b'shvuat ha'alah. So there's a shvua, and then there's shvuat ha'alah. And based on that, the first pasuk is just the shvua. And there it only gives you one side of the coin, which is, if you did nothing wrong, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. Then it prefaces the second shvua and says, well, if you did something wrong, then you'll have the shvua ta'ala. So then, if you do that, then you have, truthfully, the question is almost duplicated, even though the Gemara doesn't say it that way, but you have the shvua, or the first shvua, which only relates to the positive side, which she did nothing wrong. You have the second shvua, which all relates to if she did do something wrong, but they're two different shvuot. One's the shvua, and one's the shvuat ha'alah. So for Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, that's totally fine, because michla alav atah shomehain, that when you hear something negative, you can infer the positive. You hear something positive, you can infer the negative. So here, if the posuk tells you if she did nothing wrong, then she is fine, innocent, and she will be released without any problem. Then obviously the other side is, if that's not true and she did do something wrong, then she would not be naki. And so for Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it works out well. For Rabbi Meir, it's more problematic because he should have said both sides of it. Now, the nature of the question is somewhat difficult because even Rabbi Meir agrees in other places in Shas that when it comes to Isurim, we do say Michlal Lav Atashomehain, Michlal Hein Atashomehalav. That we do make inferences from one to the other. The question of how to reconcile that with Rabbi Meir's position here is subject to what we discussed yesterday, Machloket Geonim, Rishonim, about how far does Rabbi Meir's shita go that you need Tanai Kaful, and how does that relate to his position with regards to, by Yisurim, you do make this inference. So, over here, you have in essence an ability to make an inference. And so even Rabbi Meir should be able to answer the problem. Tosafot himself says it later on with regards to the other examples we're going to bring. And he says, Tema, mayin zela machloket, afilo le Rabbi Meir lomali. Even according to Rabbi Meir, what do I need this for? Why do I need a duplication? Because in many places, it's easy or obvious that we're making an inference. It says, if you go to the mikveh, you're tahor. Well, if you don't go to the mikveh, you're tameh. Nobody has to spell that out. The Torah doesn't spell that out in every location. Tosafot's answer is along the lines of what you said, which is, in places where it's pashut, that there's a tzivui, where there's an actual command, then we know that if you do not carry out the command, then you will not be tor. So if it tells you, go to the mikveh to be tor, if you don't go to the mikveh, obviously you're not tor, because the command says, go to the mikveh to be tor. There's no question about the other side of that picture. On the other hand, when you have situations in which it is a lashon tanai, or less of a lashon tanai, but rather informative in nature, rather than a tzivui, which over here seemingly is the case. The Kohen's informing her of information, he's not giving a tzivui about the information. So in the cases where it's just informative and not a tzivui, there Tosfot says you might read it like a tanai instead of a tzivui, and there you can't make inferences because it's simply giving you information, it's not telling you, do this, therefore this will happen. So that's one way to deal with the answer. The other is to suggest that by sota, we know that Tosafot in Gitin on Ayin Hei says that sota, says it in sota as well, is the mitzvah of sota is isur that has monetary ramifications, because she will lose her ketubah in this situation, or she will get her ketubah in this situation. So it's not solely isur where we can make those types of inferences. It is also involves monetary matters where you can't make those inferences and you need a tanai kaful in that instance. So that's another way to deal with the issue. The last of which is to suggest, and we mentioned this yesterday, the Ramban, the Chidushim makes a point like this, which is that we're looking for structure and paradigms here. We're not saying that these are really need to be a tanai kaful, that these really have to be because there's some sort of condition that's made here, but rather we're looking at these and saying, is the Torah giving us a certain precedent? Is it giving us a way to formulate things? And therefore, that's the question here. For Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it's very easy to understand the formulation here. For Rabbi Meir, the formulation should have been more wordy, or should have given you both sides to demonstrate the fact that that's the proper way to engage or give information. And the Ramban continues that any time there's any uncertainty, then Rabbi Meir requires you to do a tanai kaful. This goes along with what the Baalei HaTosafot say in Daf Ayin Hei in Gitin, that tanai kaful is needed in circumstances where you need to clarify and to be certain about the position of the individual. In other instances where it's either obvious or anansade that that is what they're thinking, then you may not require a tanai kaful. Rameir's requirement of tanai kaful is to ensure that the situation is absolutely clear. And therefore, in these instances, if there's any chashash that there might be something unclear about this, that's why Rabbi Meir says you need to duplicate the statement in order to be absolutely certain and clear that this information is being presented in a way that no mistakes can be made. So Rabbi Meir, it's easy to understand why you have all of these questions. Or even when he is mechla alav atashomei hein or hein atashomei alav, even though he does allow for those inferences by Yisur, again, if there's any question that could possibly arise, even there he would agree that you, in those cases he would need or necessitate there being a tanai kaful or a duplication of the statement. So for all of those reasons, the Gemara leaves us, asks this question on Rabbi Meir, which is, Ela Rabbi Meir, what are you going to do? It should say, chinki mi bayile. This is the Girsa of Rashi, that it should say chinki. This is also the drasha on the Gemara in Sota and the Midrash. It also brings such a drasha, which is instead of the word being read as hinaki, it should be read as chinki, that it will choke you, rather than hinaki, that you will be clean or released from it. So in that way, the word is a play on the hey and the chet. That's one way to read it. Amar of Damchum, hinaki ktiv. That what is written there is hinaki, but chinki is the way to read it. Now that's a difficult statement because in our Torah it says hinaki, and we read it as hinaki. Rashi claims over here, because the hinaki is written without a yud in it, therefore there's an ability to be midrash, the reading of it, that it means chinki. So Rashi backs away from saying that this is a kri and a ktif, and says that these are just drashot because of the way that it's spelled. They're drashot on the pasuk because hey and chet are interchangeable. There are those that suggest that these are really a kri and a ktif, and that was the whole Gemara's point over here, that we're dealing with one way to read it and one way that it's written. The way that we read it is hinaki, but the way that it's spelled, it looks like chinki. And based on that, it would have been written with a chet, possibly, in the Torah. And obviously, all of those have ramifications about what should be written in the pasuk. So that's one direction to go. And that's the way that Rashi suggests over here, which is that the word is read from both sides, which is Vishbiya Kohen Vamar Lisha im lo shachav ishotach vim lo satit tumatach harishech hinati. Then you will be released, you'll be clean, everything will be fine. On the other hand, if you read it as chinki, then you would say this. If you did something wrong, then chinki, chinki mimea marima marima ele, you will choke from these waters, vaad kisatei tachadishech. And then he takes the next pasuk and says, because you did something wrong. So then we'll read the end of this pasuk twice. We'll read it once connected to what is before it. And then we'll read it once with that which is subsequent to it. That which is before it is saying if he did nothing wrong, then we would read it as hinaki. If we read it as chinki, then we would attach it to that which is written afterwards, which says that you did do something wrong, and therefore there's a problem. So based on that, Rabbi Meir says there is a duplication over here. There's one hinaki, you'll be free and clear if you did nothing wrong. There's a chinki, you'll be choked by the waters if you did do something wrong. At kisiyatit tachadishech, if you did do something wrong. So if that's the case, you do have a duplication over here, according to Rabbi Meir. Now Gemara says, well, if that's the case, Vishlamada Rabbi Meir Hainu Dichtiv Chinki. That's why it reads Hinaki and it's written Chinki. El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Lomali. For Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, why do we need this? Again, this favors Rashi's view that we're actually reading it that way, maybe even that there's a Kri and Ktiv. And saying, why doesn't Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel deal with the Kri and the Ktiv? If you're simply saying it's a drusha, what's the question on Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel? He won't be doreshit. So what you have to say is either the ktiv was chinaki, or because, as Rashi notes here, the yud is missing, and even though it's written with a hey, and chet are interchangeable, so it does look like chinaki, and therefore Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel would be compelled to do something with it. What does he do with this? Because he doesn't need this duplication. Itzrich. We need it. Sakadat chamina in lo shachav ish hinaki. If you did nothing wrong, you would be clear. Vim shachav lo hinaki v'lo chinki. If you did do something wrong, you would not be cleansed, but you also would not have anything wrong. El isur ba'alma. There would be an isur. You did something wrong, but it wouldn't affect you, wouldn't choke you, wouldn't do anything detrimental to you. Kamash malon, that's what the chinki teaches you, that not only are you not free and clear and you have violated an isur, but you're going to be affected by the waters here, and there's something deleterious that's about to happen to the woman because she did something wrong. And that's why we need the duplication according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Now, Tosafot here asks a question, it's a broader question about all of these cases, which is, Rabbi Meir requires a number of things that come out of the Tnai B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain. And that is, first of all, that you need a Tnai Kaful. Number two is that you need Tnai Kodem L'maseh. You need the condition before the action. Number three is you need the Hain before the Lav. You need the positive statement against the negative statement, meaning that positive first, then negative. In this case, you have neither of those, because what you end up happening is the Lav is before the Hain, which is if you did not sleep with this man, then Hinaki. So you have the Lav before the Hain. That's number one. Number two is in the second part of it, where Rashi reads it as chinki, that you will be choked, mimea marimela, va'at kisati tacharishech, because you did something wrong. There again, the maseh comes before the tanai. So you're missing some of the basic things that is required by tanai b'nei gad b'nei ruvein ayidei Rabbi Meir. So now, Tosafot answers this in different ways. One way he deals with it, and this he says in other places as well, is that hain and lav is not yes and no. It's not the if you did, if you didn't. If this was true, if this was not true. The hain and lav have to do with which outcome we would prefer. What is the real action that we're trying to compel over here, or that we prefer that happened? So, by the case of Tnai b'nei Gad b'nei Ruvein, it says im yavru chalutzim lifnei b'nei Yisrael. If they go in chalutzim, then they will get the land over here. That is because that's what we want them to do. We want them to do chalutzim lifnei atzava. We want them to be the front lines. Then it says v'im lo. If they don't do that, so that's the hain and that's the lav. Over here, the hain and the lav, the outcome we want is that she did not have an extramarital affair. So there, even though it's a negative formulation which says that you did not sleep with someone else, you did not do this, it's really a positive or the better formulation of what we'd want to happen, which is we hope that she didn't have an extramarital affair. Therefore, by going first, that's considered to be a hein. By the way, that Tosafot suggested is that either if that's the preferred outcome, or potchim b'schut, we'd rather open up with something that's meritorious in her favor, then that might even override the hein and lav, or you can even read it, that is the hein. The schut is the hein. So that's how he gets around the problem of the hein and the lav, but he's still left with the problem of the fact that you have the maaseh before the tznai, the way that Rashi explains it. So Tosafot therefore brings alternative and explanation. He says, v'chein pei rishri, t'lo klai klal, ve'et at kisatit, t'chti batrei. It has nothing to do with the subsequent pasuk. Elektiv hin aki, v'avi kilu aya ktiv chinki, v'koin aya chuzer v'kofel im shachav chinki. So Tosafot claims that based on the fact that the word is either hinaki or chinki, the Kohen went back and reread the whole thing. It says, and then he would go back again and say, Im shachav ishotach, im satit tumatach rishich, chinki. And that's how you would do it. Meaning Tosafot says that you would read the pasuk twice in order to do that. Meaning that the chinki or the hinaki or the chinki or chinaki are forcing you to read the pasuk twice, once in the negative formulation and once in the positive formulation. The Rabbeinu Chananel has a very interesting reading of the pasuk, and he says, "Im lo satit tuma, if you did nothing wrong, tachad ishech, you remain under your husband's auspices." So that's the way that you would read the positive formulation, which is, if you did nothing wrong, then tachad ishech, that you'll remain there. And then the subsequent pasuk, which says, "At ki satit tachad ishech, chidid meit, v'item ish bachet shkavto mi baladei ishech." So the pashtut is that someone besides your husband slept with you. But he reads it as, if you had an extramarital affair, then mi baladei ishech, you will have to be away from your husband. You will have to be separated from your husband. And therefore he reads the two psukim without this hinaki and chinki differential between them, but simply as, one pasuk tells you, tachad ishech, you remain under your husband's auspices. And the other one says, mi baladei ishech, that you will be not under your husband's auspices. And it's done by the fact that it says, one is im lo shachav ishotach, and the other one is, kisati tachad ishech. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel gets around that problem. Now he then puts the lav before the hein again, because the negative formulation. And here he says that putchim b'schut. So that was what I mentioned before. And the Tosafot, there are two ways to deal with this hein and lav problem. One is to say that we open with the meritorious side, or the other is to say is, what is the preferred outcome? What is the outcome that we would prefer? And that becomes the hein. So it's relative. It's not absolute yes and no, or the positive or negative formulation. It has to do with what is the preferred outcome over here. Another way to read it is, hinaki can have two meanings over here. The way that we saw it, ubalashor naki. And balashor naki also, we define it as two ways. One could be naki michon nechasav. Balashor naki means that he is naki, he is considered to be innocent in this instance. So over here, he naki could be that either she is naki, she is clean and innocent in this instance, or he naki means that she could be cleansed, she could have her nishama removed from her goof, and therefore you could use the word he naki and define it in both ways. And that's another way to interpret this, to have that duality be embedded in the word he naki itself. So again, those are different ways to read the Gemara. And again, I go back to the Ramban here, who suggests that all of this is somewhat removed from the machloket of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel and Rabbi Meir in truth, because these are not really conditions. These are statements, narratives, giving you information. But nevertheless, that the Gemara sees the paradigm that are set by these items as being a way to more broadly understand what are our demands in other situations. Right, so now the Gemara continues with a question from Paraduma, which is, Bishmolam Rabbi Meimer Hainu Dichtiv. That is what is meant in the Pasuk by Paraduma, which it says, Hanugeh b'meit, l'chol nefesh adam b'tameh shivat yamim. Someone who touches a cadaver comes into contact with the mate is tameh 7 days. Hu yitchata bo b'yom ha-shlishi u'b'yom ha-shvi'i tar. He will be sprinkled upon himself on the 3rd and 7th day, and he will be tahor. That's what will make him tahor. Ve'im lo yitchata ve'yom ha'shilishi ve'yom ha'shivi. If you do not sprinkle on him on the third and seventh day, lo yitar. He will not become tor. Again, for Rabbi Meir, this is classic, which is, if you do it, you will be tahor. If you don't do it, you won't be tahor. Again, what's the necessity for repeating imlo? If you don't do this, then you will not be tahor. It's obvious. If you don't do what you're told to do, then you should be tahor. This is where Tosafot makes his comment. We find plenty of places in the Torah where it only tells you if you do this, you're tahor. It doesn't tell you the other side of it. He notes over here that this doesn't look like a tzivui. This looks like if you do it, v'im lo yitchata. If you do it, or if you do it, or if you don't do it, making it sound much more like a tznai than a tzivui, and that's why the Gemara jumps on this example rather than on those other examples. So again, for Bishlam, Mother Rabbi Meir, Dichtev, Yitchata, Bo, Bayom HaShlishi, Bayom HaShvi, Yitar, V'im lo yitchata, V'chulei, El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Lamali. What do I need all this extra wordage or verbiage here? That the mitzvah of the azah is on the third day or the seventh day. So, meaning that it's third and seventh. That's what you should do. But if you just did one of the two, that would have been sufficient. Because it says, so you can read the vav as a vav a chibur, which is that also on Yom HaShvi'i you should do it. Or you can read it as or, b'yom ha'shlishi, or b'yom ha'shvi'i yitar. So, b'chatchila, we say do it on both days. But b'diavad, it may stand from the pasuk that if you did it on one of the two, you would be tahor b'diavad. So, kamashma, and the pasuk comes to tell you, milo chata b'yom ha'shlishi, u b'yom ha'shvi'i, if you do not sprinkle on the third or and seventh day, lo yitar, you will not be tahor. So what it comes to tell you is that, b'chatchila, you must do it on the third and seventh day. B'diavad, you have thought maybe one of those two is enough. Along comes the second half of the pasuk and says, if you don't do this, you're not tahor, period. Even b'diavad. So it only works if you sprinkle on both days. It does not work if you sprinkle on one of the days. V'iza, now the Gemara continues later on with the pasuk in Paraduma, which says, V'iza tahor ala tamei, b'yom ha'shishi u'b'yom ha'shvi'i. The tahor will sprinkle on the tamei on the third and seventh days. V'chit u b'yom ha'shvi'i. And then they will sprinkle on him on the seventh day, and then he will launder his wash his clothing, go into the mikveh, and then he'll be tahor that nightfall. So now Rashi claims over here that this question is not limited to Rabbi Chanina, but this is a question on Divrei HaKol. This is a question on everyone, which is this language, and you can see the Gra ends in the extra word of v'chita'o b'yom ha'shvi'i, which the Gemara will later darshan, which is, why do I need this? Lomali. Why do I need that at all? Meaning that you just told me before that you have to put it on the third and seventh day. So why do I need another pasuk? Tell me, that he sprinkles on him on the third and seventh day. You already told me they have to do that on the third and seventh day. Why are you telling me again the same information that we had before? The reason it says the third day is because you can't do it before the third day. You have to count 3 days and then on the third day you do it. So that means not the second day. And the seventh day comes to teach you that you have to wait at least to the seventh day, and you can't do it on the sixth day, meaning that there's a fixed interval here. You need 3 days, and then you do the first one. Then you have 4 days, and you do the second one. To come in my age, we made tara. To do it in lesser amounts of that, I would not allow, because you're a mema'et the tara. You are reducing the number of days that you'd have to wait to become Torah. Maybe if he did it on the third day and the eighth day, the kamafish b'mei tara, that is extending that period of time, ema shapir dami, maybe that would be okay. So it's one thing to do it on the third day and then try to do it on the sixth day, there you're accelerating the tara, that you can't do. So maybe that's what the puzzle tells you, you do it on the third and the seventh. But what happens if you sprinkle on the third day and then you sprinkle again on the eighth day? So it actually takes you longer than the Torah prescribes. You would think that would work. Because 3 and 7 might be minimums. Who says they are maximums? So that's what it comes along. Kamash Malan, that Vizat Torah Tmei Bayom HaShlishi Bayom HaShvi, exclusively. It must be done on the third day. It must be done on the seventh day. Otherwise, Tara is not accomplished. That means both, if you do it in a lesser amount of time or a greater amount of time, it does not work. Then, the Gemara asks, V'chito Bayom HaShvi Lomali. So then what do I need that last line, V'chito Bayom HaShvi? It's true. That's only true for Kodashim. Maybe by Truma it would be enough to do one of them. Kamashalon, that you need both the third and the seventh, both for Kodashim and for Truma. The way that the Gra has the Girsa is slightly different. He has it, Hani Mile the Kodoshim. He changes that to be Hani Mile the Migdash. I would have thought that's for the Migdash. About the Truma, B'chad Nami Sagya, but by Truma it would be enough. Kodshim and Migdash generally have the same din, meaning that they're in the same category. So I would have thought that this whole process is only for Kodoshim. But for Truma, after you get through the third day, that would be it. So that's what it comes along to tell you, B'chito B'yom HaShvi. Only after you've done the seventh day, and you've gone to the Mikveh V'tayer B'Erev, then you would be Tahor, and then you can eat Truma, not just Kodoshim. And that's the Kamash Malon of that extraneous language, or that extraneous Pasuk over here. All right. Next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is an additional Shita of Rabbi Meir. If in the previous Mishnah, Rabbi Meir set out for us, hey, Tznayit B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain, the way to do a proper condition or qualification of an action. Over here, Rabbi Meir also lays out for us a different halacha. The Mishnah says it in the opposing form, but we'll see in the Gemara that Rabbi Meir disagrees. The Mekadesh Tisha, person who tries to marry a woman, but Marcus Sabura iti she kohenet. I thought she was a kohenet. Vari Livia. Turns out that she's only a Livia. Livia, I thought she was a Livia, vari kohenet. And she really is a kohenet. Ania, vari Ashira. I thought I was marrying a poor woman. Meantime, she's wealthy. Ashira, I thought I was marrying a wealthy woman. Vari Ania. And now we find out she's poor. Harizo mikudeshet. There, the marriage goes through. Mipnei shlo hitato. She did not deceive him or mislead him in any way. Then, as Rashi points out, dvarim shibalev. Anything that he says here were things that he thought. Those were in his heart. He never specified or qualified the marriage based on these items. And therefore, when he got married to whatever was standing there, whatever was there. And again, she didn't make any statements of fact that would incorporate it in the Kiddushin. And therefore, whatever he gets, he gets. He thought something else? That's his issue. If he doesn't specify or stipulate those items, then he gets what he gets. So even though these statements here in the Mishnah seemingly belong in the previous perek, nevertheless it's placed here because in a sense it's a continuation of the machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, which is that Rabbi Gamliel says you do not need to eat tnai kaful. But what this Mishnah says is there's still a minimum standard of disclosure that is needed. Again, connecting to that Tosafot and Daf Ayin Hei Gitin, who says that the tnai kaful is a way to ensure that something is clear. So even Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says you don't need that type of clarity of a tnai kaful. He still says that you need, first of all, a tnai, and they also have to have articulation of the tnai. It's not enough that this was discussed. It's not enough that this issue was raised at some point, because you need an explicit tnai here, because it's not obvious that when someone gets married, that that issue is a pivotal issue for them, and therefore they have to state it. Other situations, like what is mentioned in the Gemara Gittin about making aliyah le'eretz Yisrael, where the person sells all their property and does everything in preparations to move there to Israel, and then it fails, over there it's clear that they were doing all this because they were moving to Israel. Or the person has an only child and he thinks they passed away, and therefore they gift all their property to other people, and then it turns out that the child is still alive, then obviously they only gave it away because the child, or they thought the child had passed away. In all those cases, Anan Sade, that's their intent, and you don't have to articulate it because it's so obvious. But in this case, Kohenet, Levia, all these issues are interesting issues, but we wouldn't necessarily automatically assume that the person wants those or is makbid on those. And unless they articulate it, even according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, that would not be sufficient disclosure. Homer Lisha, Hariat Mikdeshet Li, Lachash Et Gayer. You are married to me after I convert. Oh, Lachash Et Gayri. Or after you convert. And as long as they're not Jewish, there's no such thing as Kiddushin. So only after each one of them or one of them would convert would there be a possibility of Kiddushin. So he specifies that. He says the Kiddushin will go into effect after I convert or after you convert. L'achar she'eshtachrer, if it's an Eved Knani, he says after I'm freed, we're going to have Kiddushin. L'achar she'tishtachreri, or after you're freed, we'll have Kiddushin. L'achar she'imot balich, after your husband dies, then we'll be married. He's like putting on a deposit on this woman and saying, you know, when your husband dies, I'll take you next. Oh, la'achar she'tamut achutech. Or if he's married to her sister, and he says, we'll be married after my wife, your sister, passes away. La'achar she'chlotz leich yivimech. After your yavam gives you chalitza, then we'll be married. As Rashi notes over here, this has to be according to the one who says that kedushin are not tofsim. in a woman who is a yivama that is waiting for chalitza that has a zika on her, ena mikudeshin. In all these cases, it does not work because this is what is otherwise known as davar shelo ba'al olam. It's something that did not exist in the world. Since it doesn't exist right now, you cannot create a kinyan on davar shelo ba'al olam. That is something that Rabbi Meir argues on. Rabbi Meir says you can't make a kinyan on davar shelo ba'al olam. How far or how extensive is Rabbi Meir Shito is subject to machlokot amoraim all over Shas as to how far that goes, that we can take what seemingly are intangible items or items that yet to exist, that you're able to marry them. Person says to his friend, if your wife gives birth to a female, I'm presenting her with kiddushin through you, and since you're in charge of her, you can marry her off. Then you'll marry her off. Ain't a mikudeshet. Again, no kiddushin over here because it's davar shelo ba'al olam. The baby doesn't exist right now. The girl doesn't exist right now. How can you have kiddushin in the future with a baby that does not exist? The remainder of the Mishnah is eliminated here in the Girsa, and you can see later on in the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to bring a brighta or a qualification of the Mishnah, and it seems that that was added into the Mishnah. But from the Lashon HaGemara and the brayta that we bring later on, it seems pretty clear that this is the end of the Mishnah. Right now, the Gemara says, it's not Hotam. We have a Mishnah over there. Ein tormi min atalush al mechubar. For when it comes to Truma, you're not allowed to separate out from things that are already severed to things that are still attached in the ground. V'imataram ein trumato truma. If you do it, it doesn't work. So if you have grains that are in your house, and then you have stuff in the field, and you say, you know what, I'm taking off Truma for the stuff here and for the stuff in the field. That doesn't work, because there's no such thing as Truma in the Mechubar, when it's attached to the ground. If you made it all Truma, then you have a bit, it's all Tebel, because the Truma never worked to be Truma, because it never took off that which was in the field. If you're taking off both from the Talush and the Mechubar, the Talush part will be Chulin, that'd be fine, and the stuff in the field will not be fine, but the Truma will still be problematic, because you'll have a mixture then, that when you give it to the Kohen, of Truma and Tebel. Because the Truma that worked on the separated stuff already is Truma. But the Truma on the Chubar stuff is not Truma, and therefore it remains Tevel, because it never had Truma removed from it. It's not Truma, and it's not Chulin. That means that it's still Tevel. So then you're giving the Kohen a mixture of Truma and Tevel. So that would be problematic from, if in terms of then you'd have to rectify it by taking off Truma from another location on these items. But it doesn't work. What the reasoning is, or why it doesn't work, Rashi claims over here, because it says, Digancha, Reshit Digancha, and that means midei demidgan. Only things that can be put into a pile, can be siloed. That is what is considered nesef mikri, that is brought into a pile, is brought to its final stage of processing. So that's what the word dagan means. And therefore, when it's in the field, it's not subject to that. Tosafot does not like that explanation because he says that would mean that you'd have to wait until you actually have it in the pile and the final parts of the processing are done before you could take off Truma. But we know, and there are gemarot that say that if you go ahead and take off Truma b'shipolim, even though you're not supposed to do that, it works. But that means that you have the ability to take off Truma even before it reaches that final stage of processing. So Tosafot says that the gun can't be the explanation because then you would require to be weighed all the way until the end. And that's not true. So there, for Tosafot says that it's actually learned out of the pasuk, l'cheni radari, da'am mechubar patur, nafkal mechtiv mimenu, that you take it off from it, darish v'sifri mimenu, v'lo mina mechubar. From it, and not from that which is attached to the ground. Because the pasuk is talking about talush, because it's stuff that you're using to separate from, or you are designating as truma. And because the pasuk says, v'lakachtem, or l'kicha, it's clear that we're speaking about something that is talush. So mimenu, from it, you take off, but not from that which is still attached to the ground. Now, you would still have to use the other pasuk, as he says over here. He says, maybe you could argue over here that this pasuk is only lechatchila, but b'diavad it would work. That's what he uses the word degancha for, to teach you that, obviously, degancha is not attached to the ground. So between the two psukim, you know that even b'diavad it doesn't work, but he says the real source of the fact that you can't take off the mechubar is mimenu v'lo mina mechubar. So now, b'yimine Rav Asi mi Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi presents this question to Rabbi Yochanan, which seemingly the answer should be simple based on the Mishnah that we just quoted from Trumot. Amar perot arugazo tlushim, iyu truma al perot arugazo mechubarim. That these separated out items that were already picked and are sitting over here will be truma on those fruits that are in the patch that are still attached to the ground. Or, perot arugazo mechubarim, those items or vegetables or fruits that are still attached to the ground, that on those that are separated out already. So this seems obvious. The Mishnah in Trumot basically told us not that doesn't work. But here's the nuance. When they are detached. He adds in the language, instead of just saying that that which is attached is Truma and that which is detached, or that which is detached is Truma and that which is attached, he says, Likishiyit Lishu, when they are detached. Meaning that he puts in a condition there that this will only go effective when you have severed them from the ground. Vinit Lishu. And then they go ahead and sever them. Mahu. Doesn't work in that case. So instead of saying that doing it immediately, you basically delay it, or delay the effectiveness of the Truma until you've picked it. But it's not picked now, but you say I delay it until it's picked. Samarlay. Rabbi Yochanan says, Kol shebi'ado, lav kemechuser maaseh dami. Anything that's within your control to do it, is as if it's done. And therefore, since you technically could do it immediately, then when you do it afterwards, it makes it effective at that point in time. Rabbi Yochanan says, anything that you could take care of in a timely manner, and it's up to you to take care of it, meaning that you could pick this grain or harvest this grain anytime you want it, that already makes it as if picked. So now, obviously, the Truma will not be effective until after you've picked it, but nevertheless, once you've picked it, it will go effective because you had enough control at the time that you made the statement to make such a statement. So obviously, Rabbi Yochanan is qualifying the Mishnah. He is saying that that Mishnah is talking about a case where you didn't make that statement that when I harvest it or when I take it out. So that was the deficit in the Mishnah. The Mishnah simply says, I want to take off Truma from this detached item from those that's growing in the field. That doesn't work. And Rabbi Yochanan agrees that doesn't work. When you say, I'm going to take off from the detached items here, on those detached items, once they are picked, that is fine, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Since you can do it now, therefore when it happens later on, it's effective at that point in time. Or, in essence, we looked at them as if picked, because of the fact that you can pick them. All right, now, eight of eight. Is that really true? Our Mishnah seems to indicate otherwise. Omer li shariat mekodesh li da'achar she'etgayer, da'achar she'etgayri, da'achar she'eshtachrer, da'achar she'etishtachri, da'achar she'imot baleich, da'achar she'tamut achutech, da'achar she'chloch lech yivimech. Eina mekodesh, none of those work. So, bishlama kulo labiado. None of these are in his control. Right? None of these items he controls when they happen, and therefore, he can't make a condition that would go through. Ella ger, havi biyado, to convert, is in his control. So if ger, gerut, is in his control, why isn't the kedusha go through? If he says to her, when I convert, we will have kedushin. And he's the one who can determine whether he converts or not. So since it's in his control, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that should be fine, and the kedushin go through. But it says, ger nami, lav biyado. Geirut, or conversion, is not in his control either. Damar b'chir b'avam Rabbi Yochanan. So here again, by the way, it's a statement of Rabbi Yochanan himself. Ger tzarich shlosha. A ger requires three. I mean, a beit din in order to convert. My time off. Mishpat k'tivbe. Because the word mishpat is used over there. As Rashi notes over here, but the pasuk says, mishpat echad yeh lachem kager ke'ezrach. There'll be one mishpat for the ger and the ezrach. Or the other possible source is v'shafatatem tzedek ben ishu ben achivu ben geiro. So again there, the word mishpat is used. So they learn from that a geirut requires mishpat. And if geirut requires mishpat, that is a minimum of three. So you have to require a beit din of three in order to do this. And shemi yemar, dimzakaku gulei hanetilata. Who says he's going to find the three to do it, or three people to agree to convert him? It's not a given that he will get the beit din that is needed in order to convert over here. And therefore, it's no longer in his control. If it's not in his control, then we're back to the original assumption, Eina Mikudeshet, and it's not a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Tosafot over here qualifies the need for three dayanim. He says, first of all, Nira Dafka B'Kabbalat Mitzvot Hudbein and Gimel. That only when you're accepting the mitzvot do you require three. Aval B'Tzvilah, going to the mikvah B'Chad Zagyo. If you already accepted the mitzvot, once you go to the mikveh, then you only need one. So then he asks about the fact that the Gemara tells us by a woman who's going to the mikveh to convert, that the beit din stands there on the outside, and they make sure that she went, they just make sure that she's in the water, and she's submerged in the tefillah. Why do you need a beit din? You only need that for kabbalat mitzvot. So Tosafot says that's in a case when you're trying to do both. The kabbalat mitzvot and the tefillah at the same time, then you would need three. In addition, he says, Devada the mitzvah bein shlosha. That for sure, even by tefillah, it's better to have three, but it's not ma'akev. Says v'im tomar, if you need it for kabbalat mitzvot, you need three. He says, how about hodot v'halvot? He's going to the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, which deals with the necessity for three dayanim. Do we really need three dayanim, or do we only need one dayan? So there, the Gemara bifurcates the din between hodot and halvot, that's written by them mishpat, and even so, you can be dan yechidi, whereas gzelot and chavalot require a minimum of three. So Tosfos says, why don't we look at this like hodot and halvot, and then we'd only have to require one judge. Who says you need three over here? So he says, well, because you don't know which one to go like. Should it go like the hodot and halvot? Should it go like gzelot and chavalot? When you have a choice between hekeshot, you always go the chumrah. So the chumrah would end up with three. So he says, well then, if you're going to say you need three, then you should require mumchim. Because by gzelot and chavalot, we require a minimum of three mumchim, because it says the word Elohim by those dayanim, and therefore they are required to be mumchim. They have to have smicha. So if that's the case, by gerut, you would also require three, but not just three, you would require three mumchim, three people with smicha, and obviously we don't have that today. So Tosfot gives the same answer, and there's a little Tosfot that says the same thing in the Gemarot with regards to when they say this by gzelot and chavalot is, how do we do these adjudications today? He says that shlichutayu avdinan. We are doing it based on their agency, meaning that they granted us the right to adjudicate, even though we ourselves are not mumchim, or we ourselves are not necessarily qualified to do this. Nevertheless, they empowered us. They gave us the ability to do it. And that's the way the Gemara deals with these questions, is shlichutayu avdinan, like the Gemara in Gittin says. And there, Tosafot, there's a little Tosafot, says the same thing is true by Gerut. By Gerut, we do shlichutayu avdinan. We are doing their bidding, and therefore, we, even though we have a beitin that is not smuchin, we can still act to do the Gerut. The other hand, Tosafot brings an additional answer from the Rabbeinu Netanel, the Beger Ktiv l'dorotechem, forever. The Mashem Mechoyinan Avagiv Shein Mumchin. Tosafot says maybe the answer there, according to the Rabbeinu Netanel, is that by Gerut, you don't require mumchim because it says L'dor Techem. L'dor Techem means forever. And forever, L'dor Techem means that no matter what the circumstances is, you can convert them. But that would mean that even when there's no smicha, you can convert them. And the requirement here is only for three and not three mumchim. So again, Tosfot is grappling with how broad is this requirement for three. He limits it at first to Kabbalat HaMitzvot, that it's only about the Kabbalat HaMitzvot, not the mikveh. In addition to that, he says that maybe it could be one. Maybe lechatchila it's three. Maybe b'diavad it's one. In the end, he says, nah, you need three, period. And then he says that we don't need mumchin, either because shlichutaya avdinan or because of gzera takatuv that it says, lidorotechem. All right. Samatkifla Rabbi Abba bar Mamela miato. In the case, anotein pruta l'shivchato. A person who gives a pruta to his maidservant. She's a shivcha knanit. So you can't marry her while she's shivcha knanit. But if he frees her, then he can't marry her. So if he gives a putal shivchato, v'amar, hariyat mekudesh li, l'achar she'esh tachareich. After I free you, we're gonna get married. Hachanami da b'kiddushin. Should also be kiddushin. He has control. The only thing that needs to be done over here is to free her. And he has control in order to free her over here. Now, Tosfot asks over here, isn't the freeing of a slave, an Eved Knani or a Shivcha Knanit, the final stages in conversion of those individuals? And therefore, you would require a Beit Din. And once again, we're back to where we were before, which is, it's not really in his control. So Tosfot says, this is according to the Shita that says that the Kabbalat Mitzvot is done when they first go to the Mikveh to become an Eved Knani or to become a Shivcha Knanit. So at this point, all you need is the release, meaning the Shichur, and that would make them into a full-fledged Jew at that point in time, because they're already chayavim in mitzvot ki isha. That's whether she's a shivcha or an eved knani. So the kabbalat mitzvot already took place. So you don't need the beit din of three at this point. That's a machloket as to when the kabbalat mitzvot is done in this quote-unquote conversion. Is it done up front, which this day seemingly thinks, or is it done in the back end when they finally are freed? We do another kabbalat olam mitzvot. Tvila d'achar shichur. What about the fact that you have to go to the mikveh after you are freed? Hainu tvilat ger. That's tefillah to ger, and it doesn't require three. That can be done by anyone. That's all in the control here. Tosafot Riazakein over here answers the question and says the reason that the Gemara doesn't require the three here by the Shivcha Kenanit is because the nature of the three is different. Meaning that you might need three mumchim, or three people that know what to do in a gerut when it comes to the ger. That you may not find. In that case here, by the shichur of the shivcha knanit, you just need stam three people. You don't need people to be modia her, the mitzvot, and the nature of the mitzvot, because the gerut here is already partially completed. And so therefore, there's an easier time to find those three people than it is to find the three mumchim, quote-unquote, that you would need to do a gerut for a regular ger. So the owner has control of the freer. She has control to go to the mikveh, because you don't need three, because it's not the kabbalat olam mitzvot. You put those two together, they should be able to accomplish kiddushin here, saying that in the future it will take place. It says, haki ashto. How can you compare the cases? Originally, it was a behema, meaning that the shivcha knanit has no relation or relevance to kiddushin, and she has no independent decision-making ability, because she's subject to a master. All of a sudden, then you free her, now we're talking about dat acheret. Now you're talking about something that has its own volition, will, and can make decisions. So then, at that point, you can't compel her to do anything, and therefore, you can't say that her acceptance while she was quote-unquote a behema has impact on her when she now becomes a free woman. Because, as her state in behema, whatever she does is basically whatever the adon wants her to do. Once she's a free woman, she can do as she pleases. So you can't say that her statement while she was under the auspices of the adon is binding on her once she is free. Because that statement that she makes while she is under the auspices of the adon is because the adon told her to do, and she has to do what the adon says. The other hand, once she's free, she can do as she pleases. You can't say that the commitment she makes while she was a shivcha knanit is binding when she is now a free woman, because you're dealing with two different entities. The entity changes between the time that she was a shivcha knanit and a free woman. Look, they're using the terms beima and dat acheret to show you the extreme. It's not that it's saying that it is a beima, it's just saying that there's no difference between property like a beima and a shivcha knanit. When she's under the auspices of the adon, she has no independent rights. When she's a free woman, she has independent rights. You've created a new person now. There's a totally new entity here that didn't exist before. Now, truthfully, the Gemara could have given this answer before about the goy who says, I want to get married, l'shvet gayer. You could have made the same claim over here, which is, he is a new bria when he converts. And then maybe then it shouldn't work, even though it's in his control. So what you have to say is that the gayer, when he converts, yes, he is becoming a new bria, but at least he has yichus beforehand. Shivcha knanit doesn't even have yichus beforehand. As you can see here, the Gemara is medama her to a behema. So the transition for the shivcha knanit to being a free woman is so much greater, or so much of a change, versus that of a goy converting to be a Jew. And so the distance that she has to traverse, in a sense, makes it that she's almost like a new biria when she is created or made into a free woman, which is not true when the ger converts. There is some question in the Rishonim whether it's Rabbi Oshaya here or Rab Oshaya. It probably is Rabbi Oshaya, and that would differentiate this from the subsequent Gemara, which has a question, and the two Memorot would be completely independent and not connected. What about what Rabbi Oshaya says? An otein pruta l'ishto. Someone who gives a pruta to his wife, Amarla, Hariat Mikudeshet Li, Lachar She'egashich. But I am going to remarry you after I divorce you. Ain't a Mikudeshet. Doesn't work. Hachanami the Rabbi Yochanan Dabi Kiddushin. So here for Rabbi Yochanan, it should be Kiddushin as well, because it's something that you're saying, when we're divorced, then it will go through and the Kiddushin will happen. Why isn't that the same as when it's detached, it will become Truma? Rabbi says, Nehibi Yadol Garshan. Yes, he has enough control, or he has control to divorce her. He doesn't have the ability to bring the Kiddushin on. Meaning that, as far as control is concerned, yes, he could control the next stage of the outcome, which is to get divorced, because that's in his control. But then the next step after that, which is to generate Kiddushin, that's not in his control. That is in the woman's control. She gets to decide whether she wants to accept the Kiddushin. So you can't generate Kiddushin and say that, oh, it's in my control now. Yes, it's in control to get her to the stage or status of Gerushin, but he doesn't have a control or enough control to demand that the Kiddushin go effective after that point in time. The truth is, we could have answered the same thing now, like this, for the Shifra Knanit as well, which is that once she is a freed woman, she makes the decision about the kiddushin, not the man himself. And therefore, it's not in your control. Even though it's in her control, it's not in your control, and therefore, it doesn't work. Tosfot Ri HaZaken just says, that's the nature of the Gemara, or style of the Gemara, to give a different answer for each case, even though some of these answers could answer for multiple of the questions that we're asking over here. Right, so over here, you see that the Gemara demands that the totality of the situation be in your control, and that not that it's in both parties have control over different aspects of it, that doesn't work. If the man is in total control of the situation, fine. Or if the woman is in total control of the situation, that's fine as well. But if they both need to be in control, that's already problematic, because then you have two people working and each one is in control of their situation. That's not enough control for you to generate the kinyan that you want over here. Tosfot Ri HaZaken says that only something that can be effective now can also be effective in the future. And since it can't be effective now because he's married to the woman, it also cannot be effective in the future. Alright, so Mara says, Tifshot Debay Rav Hoshaya. From this, let us answer up a question that was posed to Rav Hoshaya. Hanotein shtei prutot l'isha. Someone who gives two prutot to a woman. B'chat amar la itkadshi li ayom. Will one of those prutot get married to me today? B'chat amar la itkadshi li l'acha she gashich. And then, the other one will be when we get divorced in the future. From this you should conclude that it doesn't work, because we just said that it doesn't work. The second one can't work because you don't have control. She's in control. Maybe this situation or circumstance is different, because just like the Kiddushin currently can go into effect now, so too you can generate the Kiddushin for after time. Which, as Rashi points out over here, since you can generate what you're trying to generate in the future now, in the immediate present, therefore you can also generate it in the future, which is, he's marrying her now, and he's marrying her in the future. How can he marry in the future? So the answer is, mitgo, Rashi says, di by the kedushte hashto mikadshe, since you have the ability now to generate kedushin, tafsi by kedushim lachar zman mehashto, you can generate kedushin for the future. Unlike the case where it's his wife. When it's his wife, he can't generate Kiddushin with her right now because they're already married. So since he can't generate Kiddushin now, he also can't generate Kiddushin for the future and say, when I divorce you, we will be married. On the other hand, when he's dealing with a single woman and says, I want to generate Kiddushin for the future, since he could generate Kiddushin presently, he can also generate it for the future. And therefore, just like the Kiddushin are effective for today, they will also be effective for the future. And that's how you could differentiate that case from the previous case. And in that instance, we don't have an answer then to Rav Hoshaya's query. Tanya Kavote de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan's contention here that when you have control, then it's not considered to be a davar shelo bali olam. Ein tormim in a talu shelo mechubar. Vim taram, ein trumato truma. That's again our Mishnah. Ketzad amar, ketzad. What is this circumstance? Amar perot aruga zo tulushim iyu trumat al perot aruga zo mechuberet. These detached fruits, vegetables, will be truma on those attached vegetables or fruits. Pero darugazo michuberet iyu truma pero darugazo tulushin. These attached fruits or vegetables will be truma on those that are detached. Lo amar klum. He said nothing. Again, the same as the Mishnah that we quoted from Trumot. Aval amar kilit likishit lishu. That when they are detached, vinit lishu, and they were detached, divarav kayamin. It works. It's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. That if you can, in the future, determine the outcome of this situation, it's totally within your control, then it works. When you do that action, it will go effective at that point in time. Yeter al kain amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. But Eliezer ben Yaakov said even more than this. Afilu amar, even if he says, perot arugozo tlushin iyu truma, perot arugozo mechuberet. If you say that these detached fruits and vegetables will be truma on these attached fruits and vegetables, perot arugozo mechuberet iyu truma, perot arugozo tlushin, or that these attached fruits and vegetables will be truma on something that's already detached, likashi aviyu shlish, when they grow to one third of their maturation, Ve'yit l'shu, and then be detached. Ve'yit l'shlish, they grow to one third of their maturation. Ve'yit l'shu, and then they are detached. Divarav kayamim. That which he did works. So what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov does is take it a stage back from what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said that mechusar maaseh, if you're missing a simple action, and it's in your control to do that action, That is not a ma'akev. That does not stop the ability of you to make a kinyan or to generate truma, all these cases, because it's in your control. And so when you do it, it will be effective as long as you state that, that when I take it off, it will be truma. If you take it off, it will be truma because it's in your control. What Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adds over here is that there is a certain minimum threshold from before which there is no such thing as truma maser. And that is what's called the onata masrot. The onata masrot is determined by, for grains, at least 1/3 of their maturation. Well, until they reach 1/3 of their maturation, they are not chayav in trumot masrot. If you cut them down before that, they would not be chayav in trumot masrot. That is not considered to be, quote unquote, fruits, vegetables, dagan, because it's just too early stage. What this individual does is that they have yet to reach the stage where they'll be chayav in trumot masrot, because it hasn't reached 1/3 of its maturation. So what he states is, when it reaches 1/3 of its maturation, and I detach it, then it'll be truma. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, fine, it works. So now we have a qualification of that statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Amar Rabba, lo amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, elo b'shachat. It has to at least be that there is some sort of shoots or green shoots that are there. Aval b'agam, lo. But if it's in the agam, here agam does not mean the standard of agam, which means like a pool of water or a swamp. But agam means that it is simply emerging from the ground. We'll see in 1 second. I mean, it has to be something that already has grown. It has some substance to it. It just hasn't reached the 1/3 point of its maturation. On the other hand, if it's just like a little green thing sticking out of the ground, that's too far back for it to work. Yosef Amar, afilu be'agam. That even if it's in that stage, it's okay. So the difference between them, and that's what Rashi notes over here, is demide de minkar b'choshevu. It has to be, according to Rabba, something that is visible and significant. So if you're just at the early stages of emergence, that does not consider to be significant, and it's not discernible. Once they've already grown as the green shoots and they're already sticking out of the ground, there it's already visible, it's definable, it's discrete, and it's chashuv already. That you could do, and that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says. Rabbi Yosef says, no, even at the earlier stage, we are okay with that. My mashma dayagam lishna dubutzlana. How do you know that this lashon of agam is not like, again, the standard lashon of agam, but rather that it is butzlanahu? Rashi says shum ivatzel vole min aretz, that it emerges or peaks out of the ground, and there is enough kedei lakuf v'chave. There's enough to bend it over. I mean that there's enough green there that you could twist it over on itself. How do you know that that's what the word agam means? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Halakof ki agmon rosho. Will he bend his head like that of the bulrush? Right? If you ever look at the bulrushes in the wind, it's as if they're bowing their heads down to whoever's there. So the mashal that's been given here in the Shayahu is Halakof ki agmon rosho. So you see here, the word agam, or agmon, is used to mean something that bends its head, something that can be bent over. So that's how you know that this agmon means something that comes out of the ground that can bend over a little bit. That's what is being meant by the word agam over here. So now, kaman azla hadatanya. Like whom does this brighta go? Now, many change the gears here to tznan. This goes back to what we said in the Mishnah, that our Mishnah has the lashon in it, and the stuff that was at the end of the Mishnah was added in as a brighta. So the more likely reading here is there's a tznan. We're going to quote our Mishnah. And they want to qualify the Mishnah from a Braita. So right now we're quoting the Mishnah, and that's why it should say possibly Tznan over here. Mazahat Tznan Omer Lechaveiro. Someone says to his friend, Min Yalda Yishticha Nekeva. If your wife gives birth to a female, Mikudeshed Li, then that girl that is born will be married to me, Lo Amar Klum. Doesn't work. From Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina comes along and qualifies it. This is the Braita aspect. That Lo Shanu Ela She'en Yishto Meuberet. That's only if his wife was not pregnant yet. Aval ishto meuberet dvarav kayamim. If she's already pregnant, it would work. This goes along the lines of what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said, which is, come on, who's this like? Ika Rabba, if it's like Rabba, it's shuhukar ubra. When her pregnancy was already noticeable, you can tell that the woman is pregnant. That's far enough along where it's minkar, it's visible, discernible, and it's chashuv already. So for Rabba, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that's already enough or far enough along that you can already make conditions about that item. It's already, quote-unquote, Badi Olam in that sense. Ika Rabbi Yosef, it's Rabbi Yosef, Apishlo Ukar Ubra. As long as she's pregnant, Even though it's not visible, discernible that she's pregnant, but if she is pregnant, then the Tanai would go through. Now Rashi over here discusses why is the Gemara now asking a question according to clearly Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Shita. Gemara wants to know that what we say in our Mishnah and the qualification of Rabbi Hanina, how does that fit into Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion? Or is that supportive of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion? All right, so now Rashi claims it is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kaimalon, the Mishnah Toka Venaki. That because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Gemara says about his Mishnayot that there are Kav, there are a few of them, Vinaki, but whenever he's found there, whatever he says is clear, succinct, and halachic. And so therefore, what Rashi says over here is that basically the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And that's why the Gemara is going down this path of discussing Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef and the qualification of the Mishnah by Rabbi Hanina and saying that it fits into Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So that's why we're doing this. Even though it seemingly would be against the halacha, because why would you go like a dat yachid of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? The answer is, we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. If you look in the Tosafot, he says he doesn't think that's right. Vim tomar minale the Rabbi Hanina, dairi gesheni shtomi uberet, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hi, v'tomari af shishtomi uberet rabbanani. Who says over here that it's a case when his wife is not pregnant, and it's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, is the author of our Mishnah. Maybe it's a case when, even when his wife is pregnant, and it is the Rabbanon. How does he know over here that it's talking about Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and the whole Mishnah has been qualified by Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? So the answer is, because we're going to bring a Braita in a second, we're going to bring a Braita later on, that brings the opinion of Rabbi Meir who believes Davar Shelo Bali Olam is able to have a kinyan made about it, or intangible objects are allowed to have a kinyan made about it. So Rabbi Meir is the opposing figure in our Mishnah. He's the one who disagrees with our Mishnah. And when we bring that Braita down, the one thing that is missing over there is Im Yalda, this case of Im Yalda. So what you see from that is, even Rabbi Meir agrees that Eina Mikudeshet, that it doesn't work. So then it shows you that Rabbi Meir believes that even the statement in our Mishnah is true. Well, if Rabbi Meir believes Dovar Shebal Olam can work, how could Rabbi Meir agree with our Mishnah in the case of Yalda? The answer is that there are different stages in what Davar Shelo Bali Olam is. And that's what this whole machlok about how far Rabbi Meir's Shita goes. And we know, the Gemara is going to say in a second, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov have the same Shita. Based on that, it becomes clear that our Mishnah is authored by a position that agrees with Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So therefore, Rabbi Hanina comes along to explain to us or qualify for us that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion is not just a free-for-all, but there are limitations to it, and that's how we know it's speaking about Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And then Tosfos goes on to say that even though the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov everywhere because his Mishnah is kavanaki, hachaleit hilchato kavate. Here the halacha is not like him, because he brings a machloket in Bava Metzia between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, and Rav Nachman seemingly sides against Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and we know the halacha is like Rav Nachman over Rav Huna, because the halacha is like Rav Nachman bidinei. Whenever there's deal with Dinim, because he was a Dayan, the halacha is like Rav Nachman. So based on that, Tosfos rejects Rashi's assumption here that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And obviously this has big nafkaminot as to whether the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov or not, or whether Davar Shelo Bali Olam, or these things that are their earlier stages, can you go that far back and create conditions in them, even though they're not fully developed already? Vika Damre, the son that read it this way, Amar Rabba, Lo Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Elo B'Shachat, the Bei Kibsha. B'Shachat, the Bei Shakya, Lo. That's only true in the Shachat of a Bei Kibsha, which is a rain-fed field. This is a field that gets all its water from the rain. And therefore, that type of Shachat is considered already far enough along that you have to do nothing except harvest it. So it'll rain, it'll continue to grow, and then you'll harvest it once it grows past that maturation point of 1/3. But b'shachat b'shachya, if you're talking about a field that is irrigated, that has to be watered, then it doesn't work. Why? Because someone has to water the field in order to ensure that they go past that point of maturation. Or in other words, what Rabba is saying is, you can create a condition that I will do an action in the future based on something that is natural growth. This item will continue to grow and reach that maturation point where you could cut it without you doing anything. And then you'll go and cut it. So that's fine, because the only action that's missing is you're cutting it. Everything else will happen naturally, and then you go and cut it. So that's the only thing missing. That's the same as Rabbi Yochanan. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is suggesting. But then Rabbi Yosef says, afilu b'shachat b'shakya. Even in a field that is irrigated, we could say the same thing. So even though it requires irrigation for it to grow, but if it is irrigated, it will grow. And that irrigating is also within your control. You have the ability to do it. Since it's already reached the point of shachat, which is far enough along that it's going to continue to grow. And maybe even if you don't water it, it'll probably get to the point of maturation, even though you should water and you're going to continue to water it. So maybe because of that, it's far enough along where we consider it already to be something that's badi olam, something that will naturally get to the next stage, and therefore it's okay. So come on, Azla, Tanya, or again, Tetznan, or Mishnah, Ha'omer l'chaveru imel da'ishtecha nekeva, mekudesh li, lo amar klum. From Rabbi Chanina, lo shanu, lo shen, ishto meuberet, aval ishto meuberet, devarav kayamim, come on, who's that like? K'shuhukar ubra, v'divri akol. It's a case where the pregnancy is visible, and it's according to both Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Over there, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef only argue about something, whether the field has to be watered or doesn't have to be watered. But everybody agrees that if you get to the point of shachat, where it's visible and discernible and chashuv, that that would be enough for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's din. So by the case of the woman being pregnant, everybody agrees once the pregnancy is visible and discernible from the outside, that this would go through, because there, the natural growth of the baby would be to continue to grow and go to full maturation and be born. So the only thing missing over here is the fact that the baby will be born in the future. So that we can do, and the master, the father can marry off the daughter, and therefore this could be put in motion now, because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov believes that you can make a kinyan on davar shelo badi olam, as long as in the second lashon there is something visible and chashuv already. According to the first lashon, we had a machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef as to how visible and significant it has to be, with Rabbi Yosef having a lower standard than Rabbi, and therefore there was a nafkamina between them in the previous case. In this case, there's no nafkamina between them because they both agree you need at least that minimum standard of hukar and chashuv. Okay, we're going to stop over here, four lines from the bottom of Samach Bet, Amud Bet.